Orioles Museum, and we're going to be talking about real memories, and this is for the centennial in July. And we're just going to start by chatting, and I'm going to ask Tom a little bit about his own background, where he grew up, where he went to school, how he happened to go to Rio.
I was born in Lansing, but during the war years, my dad worked Silver Front. He worked in war planning, but at Nash Kelvin area, he worked in the defense plant. But then he got drafted, but in the meantime, we moved to Nashville, Michigan. So some of the younger years, I lived in Nashville, but he commuted to Lansing. But then he, after even having four kids, he still got drafted in the Navy during the war.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So, but he worked in the, he was a manager of a lumber company, Young Brothers Daily, out here in Michigan Avenue. And during the war, he had to go to work in the defense plant. Then he got drafted. When he got back out of the Army, he was looking for a job in a lumber yard again, and that was his field he wanted to be in. Like a lot of people, had problem finding work. So he got a job as a manager in a lumber yard in Reed City, Michigan. So for quite a few years. And we lived in Reed City, Michigan, and from there, he also opened a paint and wallpaper store of his own. My mother operated that in Reed City, but he had an opportunity to come back to Lansing area and in order to open a paint and wallpaper store in East Lansing, so we moved back to East Lansing. So I finished my last three high school years in East Lansing and graduating in 1955 from East Lansing High School. So we were back in the Lansing area.
And after graduation, what did you do?
Went to technical school, which is now community college. The old Central High School was a technical school for the Lansing School District, and I went to automotive mechanics training there after high school. They didn't have a real extensive program in East Lansing, so I just wanted to continue into my training, and from there I got a job in a gas station and had a large service department in East Lansing, Fuller's standard gas, and I had a large repair shop in the back. I worked there for several years. But the pay wasn't very good, so I found that they were hiring at Rio, so I hired in December 8th, I think, of 1960 in Rio as a mechanic. Mechanic's job, Rio, at that time, and in fact all the time I worked there, really had its ups and downs as far as employment. There was a lot of lean times and good times through the year, so I moved around into a lot of positions at Rio. I started a mechanic, but I was fortunate enough after Rio closed down, I called the personnel department to see if I could get a record of my employment. And they sent me a copy of it. So
amazing. They still had the paperwork in the office.
Yeah, so it shows every place I worked and every job I had. I counted them up, and I had about 20, in 15 years I was there, I had 20, 21 different jobs.
Oh, my goodness. And such as?
Well, I started out, like I say, as a mechanic, but that only lasted a couple of months, and then they had layoffs, and I was going to lose my job, so I went up to personnel and see if they had any other job openings that I might be qualified for, and they thought, well, yeah, they did have some inspection jobs on the assembly line that I would probably qualify for. So I went from, $2.53, I got a cut in pay to $2.34 an hour.
Oh, you had to take a cut in pay to go up.
Cut in pay, but I still had a job. So.
Well, that's the important thing. Who did you work for there?
I hired in Floyd Foltz was my foreman when I hired in as mechanic. Then when I went on inspection, Bill Cummings was the inspection foreman. I worked out, inspected on the assembly line, and my records show that I got a merit raise in '61, and then I kept after trying to get a better paying job, so I signed up for a job. And it was, of course, this in 62 as a inspection roles. We test drove trucks
on the rollers?
On dynamometers. So I got a job on that, and that paid better money. But that didn't last long either, according to this. I was 10 of 62 and 6 of 63. Oh, I got a better job. I upgraded myself again to final checkout of the inspection department.
Now, what would you do on final check?
We checked the whole truck out completely. We took the production order and checked the production order over against the truck to make sure it had all the correct components and everything was installed correctly. And we checked all the serial numbers and recorded all the pertinent data on the final checkout, and just made sure that everything was complete and ready for shipping and final checkout. So that's what I did for.
Did you find sometimes that there were some that were lacking something?
Yeah, through the years they had a lot of parts shortage problems and stuff, and repair floor was very busy because they did a lot of had to add a lot of parts to the trucks that come off the line with short parts. And so the repair floor was a large department having to repair the trucks, and they had to go through final paint and inspection and testing. And so most of the time while I worked at Rio was on the repair floor, and either as a rolls dynamometer operator or final inspection, or I even road tested for a time, but most of my time I spent was as the inspector on a repair floor.
If the parts, you said short parts, you mean that the parts weren't in the factory?
Yeah,
they were. And then so you'd have to create them?
Well,
somebody would?
We had to make sure that they were either coming late, or they had to order the parts, or for some reason they did run out of parts, and then they would come down online without them, and then the parts man would have to run down a part and find out whether it was ordered or whether it was in route to the plant, or if it was stored somewhere where somebody couldn't find it or something. and they'd get the parts down to the mechanics so they would have to install them. I worked a long time on military inspection also.
Did you? In
rolls and final inspection and road tests. Sometimes we road tested them, sometimes we run them on test rolls.
Test roads?
The rollers.
Oh, the rollers,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
And the military didn't have a dynamometer. They were just, all they did was put vials on them, warmed them up, and make sure to check for leaks, and had to put about 10 miles on every truck on the rolls.
So you did?
To check to make sure everything was operating properly, and then we run them over a pit to check for any kind of leaks or anything.
So somebody could go underneath?
Yeah, we ran in underneath in the pit. This was 3A. 3A building was a long, narrow building where they run all the militaries on the repairs, and then they did the final paint.
Where was that building? Where in the complex?
Well, it was just behind the engineering building. There was a large parking lot inside the complex there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that parking lot would be just completely full with military trucks waiting for repair and final inspection.
Mm. How many coats of paint, you mentioned paint, how many coats of paint, say, on a military truck?
Well, everything came to us with it was supposed to be a final finish, but then they completely repainted them again after that.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. And they undercoated, they had a rack, drove them up over on a ramp for undercoating. They had to undercoat everything.
Mm.
And they had military inspectors there all the time to inspect the trucks.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh.
What a process to get them through the military inspection.
How long would you think it would take to make a truck for the military from beginning to final inspection?
Probably a couple of days, from start to finish on the assembly line a couple of days, but mm-hmm. it then, you know, another day to for when it finally got, when it went into the run, maybe 20 or 30 trucks a day through that assembly.
And how were they delivered, the military trucks in particular? Were they driven?
Well, some of them were shipped, some of them, a lot of them went by rail car. We had an export department. They took them over there. And they if they went overseas or going overseas or something, they would take the cloth tops off, fold the windshields down, and I put a preservative on everything and prepare them for overseas shipment. And they would pack up everything in wood boxes, to tarps and all that stuff with the tools that went with the truck, would be all strapped into the cargo body, and then they would be mounted on railroad cars and shipped out that way. A lot of them by rail.
Oh, that's interesting.
We had our own shipping department for export. Yeah.
Big packing boxes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they had big, like, freight weeks.
Did you ever hear back from any military unit anywhere in the world about how the truck stood up, or was
good, or was bad?
Personally,
but I've heard from, you know, reports, you know, since about people that had the military trucks, and you know, they loved the truck. You know, it really was a lifesaver for some of them, because they were really a rugged, well-built truck, and it held up well for them. So
what about the civilian trucks? Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, we had a good quality product, and it was too bad that it didn't last any longer than they did. But we were really proud of the quality truck that it's been built for years, and it had a good reputation. And we've sold a lot of export trucks. We sold them all over the country, all over the world, and a lot of them they would just. Disassemble the trucks and ship them, pack them in boxes and disassemble it, take the cabs off, and disassemble everything, and then pack them in boxes and ship them and have them reassembled at their destination.
Oh, really?
A lot of that.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. I haven't been able to talk to anybody before about this particular aspect.
So military?
I find that interesting.
Yeah.
Well, they've talked about the military trucks, but the actual, how they were delivered, and all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. That was,
I think in '92 I talked with from export. Not Art Crown.
I don't know.
Can't remember. Anyway, and I learned a little about it then.
Yeah.
This is good. So, we already mentioned the training you got probably came from you going to Lansing Tech and then going on the job working quite a while as a mechanic repairman.
That's where I got my background for mechanic and stuff, and so that kind of lended itself to inspection, because I knew the ins and outs of the vehicle and what to look for. So
what to look for.
It helped to have a mechanic's background to be a good inspector. So I always went for jobs that were above my seniority level. So I've seen many times the job posting, and I figured I qualified for it. But sometimes, every time there was a little bit of a slow time, I would get laid off that job and bumped back from a final checkout inspector, which paid 10 or 15 cents more an hour, back down to a line inspector. But so I inspected probably every station on the main assembly line, cab room. I even spent 2 years in a motor plant inspecting, because that was supposedly the worst job in the place, the motor plant.
Really? Why is that?
Well, it was an old plant, and it was all machine parts, so it was dark and dingy and with machinery running all the time. They figured that was the worst place to work, but I wasn't looking forward to going out of it over there, but that was pretty typical. Every job I went on, I didn't like the fact that I had to learn a new job, and I didn't like it when I first got there, but after I learned the job, I enjoyed every one of them. I learned a lot over in the inspection department, over in the motor plant, because you work with machine parts. You have to use gauges and all that sort of stuff. So I learned a lot, and so I never regretted every move. And I finally got to the point after a few years, they couldn't tell me I wouldn't qualify for a job because I had done most of them already. You know?
Well, that's a valuable employee to the company, I would think.
Yeah, because I did have a lot of experience. In fact, I was foreman for probably 3 years on inspection department for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was also, I think before I went on as foreman, I was a salary job. I was on as engineering change coordinator.
And what is that?
When they had a time there was an engineering change to a vehicle, it had somebody to coordinate it with production to make sure that everything happened in sequence at the right time. There was a person involved with the parts department, and they would make a determination as to how many, if they were going to have to make this change, there may be a lot of parts scrapped or something that were now no longer usable if they made this change. So parts department would inventory the parts involved with this thing and see what would might have to be scrapped or you put in service parts or whatever. And they made a determination that, it depended on whether it was a safety change where it was important to change it. It happened right away. It didn't matter how many parts of the head they had to scrap. It was done right away. But if it was just a minor production change, they would inventory the parts and to determine how many parts they had and where was the best point to start this engineering change.
Oh, okay.
And I would coordinate that. I'd take the prints out and explain to production foreman what the change was and when, what serial number or what actual time this change was going to be made at that particular time, so that I coordinated it through engineering and parts department and production to tell them when this change was going to be made.
Well, that's an interesting.
That was still part of the inspection department.
A lot of responsibility there.
Yeah. So it was a very interesting job.
I bet it was.
You got to travel the whole plant and learn a lot about the engineering end of it. And of course, you got to know all the production people and the foreman. And you had to know how to read the prints and understand what the change is going to be and how to best implement it. Well, that was an interesting job, but that only lasted a couple of years. They decided that, I guess they didn't need an engineering change coordinator, and they just let them flounder on their own as far as how to get the changes made.
That must not have been as easy for the foreman.
No coordinated way of changing it after that.
Oh.
After that, I went on as 3 years I worked as a inspection foreman, and most of the inspectors I had were on the repair floor. And at that time, we were going pretty guns. It was we had a lot of employment at the time, running a lot of production. And
would that
I
have been
had about 20 to 22 people under me, inspectors.
Mm.
And I spent most of my time just coordinating overtime because they were working a lot of overtime on the repair floor, and I would. But the union required that you have to ask them before 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something. I can't remember the exact times, but you'd have to ask the guys to work overtime. If you didn't ask him, you couldn't. You had to keep each employee within a certain number of hours of working the same number of hours. And so if you didn't ask them before 2 o'clock, you couldn't put them on the chart as they refused those hours, you know. So you had to keep the hours. But all in each classification within a certain part. So I had most of my time in the afternoon running around asking everybody to work overtime.
Can you work tonight? Can you work tonight?
Yeah, it was when I had that many employees and that many stations to cover.
You were all over the
it
place.
It was a very, very time-consuming job, just keeping them.
I bet.
And when they refused, then you had to go find somebody that would work the job.
You probably didn't get too many refusals.
No, but there were some guys that, you know, that would work, carpool or something like that.
Oh.
So a lot of guys didn't want any overtime, and they would refuse it. You still had to ask them, or if you didn't, you'd get caught. So you had to ask them whether you know that knew they were going to turn it down, but you still had to ask.
What years, you mentioned they were going great guns. What would that have been in the 60s, do you think?
Let me see if I can see
anything. A lot of military contracts.
Yeah, it would have been the mid to late 60s. I don't know if I was warm enough, I could think. Foreman, 68, I was, so it's been late 60s, it was 68, according to when I was, I was on salary at that time in 68.
Oh, you were on salary before that?
Yeah, that.
You were just hourly?
Yeah, see, when you got a foreman, you left the union and went on to into a salary position.
Oh.
You were not represented to the union, so the engineering change coordinator job and the foreman's job were salary positions, so you had to leave the union. You still still maintained that the seniority that you, but you didn't accumulate any more seniority.
Oh.
So although I had 15 years there, I think I only had 10 years as far as the union is concerned, as far as union seniority. So when I got back off of salary back onto hourly, I lost the, so a lot of guys that were in my seniority had passed me on the seniority list. So
sure.
I would be lower seniority, and that's the reason that, you know, I ended up in the, like, two different times I worked on the assembly line. I didn't even have enough seniority with at 8 or 10 years seniority, didn't have enough seniority to stay on assembly or on inspection. I worked one time I worked for a year or two in the cab department. Another time I worked on the frame assembly, well, engine assembly. I was helping with the mounting all the accessories and stuff on the engine. So a couple of times I got laid off to the point where I had to go to work on the assembly line.
When you were had to go off the union, did you then have any kind of job protection? Nobody to back you up if there was a problem?
No.
You were on your own.
Yeah, you didn't have a union backing. In fact, they were against you.
Because you were management.
You were management.
Yeah. It's the old story, isn't it?
you were the enemy at that point. Yeah.
That had to be kind of strange for you and for the people around you. Today you're the boss, next week you're on the line next to him.
There was a lot of that happened. A lot of guys, because they did a lot of promoting within, and a lot of guys who showed some potential on the repair floor or assembly line would get promoted to salary positions, and that happened a lot. And some of them would last several years, and some of them lasted for a lot of, most of the guys that were good, successful foremen were originally hired in as workers, working in the parts department, parts, or on the assembly line or the repair floor, and they would show potential, and they would get promoted. A lot of that happened.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I'm not sure that happens anymore nowadays, where people can work their way by their merits, by their evaluations, and work their way up to better jobs.
It's like everybody to have college degrees and all kinds of certificates and.
Not everybody's meant to go to college,
And that's not always a good indicator of a good supervisor.
That's
right.
What kind of working conditions do you remember? I'm thinking of safety. I'm thinking of in terms of cleanliness. Of course, it's a shop, so you can't. I don't expect it to be whitewashed floors.
It was an old building, and
it was an old building.
A lot of different levels, and ramps and tunnels, and
tunnels.
There's tunnels that went from one building to another, and
really,
they'd go under a road and walkways to. Get out of the building. Well, I'm talking about the 3A lot from the main repair floor to the 3A lot. The real narrow tunnel. You used to be able to drive. You had to be careful. There wasn't a lot of room. The thing was built for the early cars, but you could drive the big trucks through them.
You could. It was big enough to drive a truck through.
Yeah.
And it would go
from the main repair floor out to this 3A lot, which was in, surrounded by buildings. It was, the lot was inside the complex.
Like a courtyard kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Hmm.
Yeah, so there was, like I say, there was different levels in the building, so you'd have to drive up ramps and, to get in and out of the place. And yeah, it was some of the old wood floors. You drive a truck over and wonder if they would hold up.
Oh.
And they used a lot of wood blocks, and some of the, especially in the stock rooms and stuff, the heavy wood blocks for flooring. And the building leaked a lot. Heavy rains, water would run inside as well as outside.
You know, oh, is that
right? We got a lot
of
flooding. A lot of flooding problems with the heavy rains. The water would go inside the building, and these wood block floors would soak up water and swell. You'd come in next day after a heavy rain, and there'd be big humps in the floors where these wood blocks had swelled up and made big humps in the floor. And then the maintenance people would come out and knock them down and rebuild them and put the blocks back in.
That's interesting.
Yeah, in the same way they would shrink up too, so you'd have a lot of loose blocks.
And then, the other way.
Yeah, it would shrink up, so you had big gaps between the blocks, and they'd have to come in and add spacers to them, they would just come trucks driving over them would come apart, start coming, blocks would come apart, and they'd check. Hey, yeah, there was a lot of maintenance to those old wood floors. Yeah, that was.
And of course, no air conditioning, and couldn't open windows really, I imagine, in a lot of
areas. No, a lot of, they had the old windows, and a lot of them were not open, and you didn't dare open them. They might not get them closed, you know.
Oh,
yeah, so it was an old plant, but it was, I think, besides the product, the people, I still know, still talk and meet with a lot of the people, and there were a lot of great people that worked there.
Can you remember some of the people you worked with?
Well, a lot of them worked here at the museum. Dick Krewiler volunteers here. And,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know Don Ely that well. He worked in the
Don Ely,
E-L-Y, I imagine. Yeah, he worked mostly in the service. They had their own service garage outside of the plant that they operated the maintenance and service facilities. He worked there most of the time with his father and at the plant. His wife did too, I believe. So, in there, so. And Larry Otis.
During the years that you were there, well, let me see, you hired in what year and you left in what year?
I hired in December. December 8th of 1960, and I worked there until they closed.
You were there.
About the last 6 or 8 months that I worked there, I worked in the service department. Worked with Dick Treeler while I was part of the service department. I knew most of the people in the service department through the inspection and other work and stuff that I have done.
Wasn't much work the last few months that you were there?
We were struggling because there was a lot of creditors were really putting a squeeze on the company for money and stuff, and a lot of them were supplying material because we weren't paying for them. A lot of them put us on pay-as-you-go. We had to pay for the parts that they would have to pay for the parts they shipped us because we weren't very good at paying our bills, and so things got really, we knew we were in trouble. We were just hoping that we would be able to find some way to pull us out of it, but they would have trouble running the assembly lines at times because they're not having enough parts and components to build trucks, you know.
People were being sent home.
Struggling. And we built a lot of trucks that were just half built, a lot of parts missing off them. And we had trucks stored all over town and lots all over town.
Oh, really?
That were missing a lot of parts, and they would determined that they had enough parts to complete the truck, and they'd go out with a wrecker and pick them up. And we had our own wrecker there, and our wrecker operators, and they'd pick the truck up and bring it into the repair shop, put it in a stall, and get the parts over there, and the mechanics would start putting it together. And there was a lot of that went on, and it got pretty bad. And
people were getting worried.
Yeah, we knew we were in trouble. But
well, there were still contracts
for the
product?
Yeah, I guess the order bank was still pretty good. We had still quite a few orders out there for trucks. And,
mm-hmm.
In fact, we were building a lot of military trucks at that time, too. We never were able to complete the military orders. We had orders for military trucks. And at the time, we bid the contracts, and when inflation hit, the price cost of building parts and all costs started skyrocketing, and we were supposedly building trucks at a loss because we couldn't. We bid the contract, and the military says this is, we bid it at this cost, and then come out, we were paying a lot more for the parts that we were having to go on the truck, so building them, we weren't making any profit from what they were, this is what management tells you, we're not making any money
on
trucks. And so we went to the, they went to the government and said, you subsidize aircraft and everybody else industries to keep them afloat, keep them building stuff, but we never were able to get any additional relief from the government, from the military, to help us complete the military contract. So I don't think they ever did finish the whole contract.
So that was part of the problem, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a lot of military that were incomplete, too, and I guess, they brought guys in after they closed down to finish what they could complete.
Finish what they could. What happened to the things that couldn't be finished, I wonder?
And that all got sold off on auction.
Oh.
Yeah,
they had a big auction?
Yeah, big auctions and sold off everything.
I see. Individuals or companies or would come
a lot of companies came in and bought large blocks of different materials they figured they could use. Individuals bought dealers come in and buy a chassis and take it to their shop and try to complete it themselves, And so
I imagine over the years you probably were a part of a lot of funny things or bad things that happened. Anything in particular that sticks out in your memory? Something?
Oh, when I worked in military on the rolls.
On the rolls,
roll testing military. I had a close friend who started to come to Rio. He was a mechanic also. He come on, got on the inspection department. The two of us were running the testing militaries, and somehow he was testing a truck, and I don't know why he got out of the truck, what happened, he threw something or what happened, and he was running the truck, and set the throttle on the truck was running on the rolls, and somehow fell between the wheels, and was killed.
That's terrible. Some of the other fellows that I've talked to have alluded to that. That's sad. Let me see here. Looking back, I think I know the answer because I think I heard it between the lines here, but looking back on Rio, what's your impression of the place? Good place to work, bad place to work?
Yeah, it was, like I said, you started out at, $2.43 an hour.
That's what you started at?
Yeah. And, we were $4 and almost $5 an hour.
Wow.
Looks like the last job I had, before I went on salary, it paid the bills. And
you raised your family.
Raised the family.
Do pretty well with them.
Yeah, three kids and bought a house. And it was a union job. We paid comparable for GM, UAW, and we got comparable contracts that General Motors got. And, you know, it was a steady job. I moved around a lot, like I said.
But, so that was interesting, wasn't it?
But I don't remember ever getting laid off out of the building, out of the plant. I worked all the time. A couple times I was off on minor sick leave ground. The employment record here, so I missed very little, you know, very little time. You know, I could tell, you know, you could tell when my dad died, you know.
Oh, sure.
It's a code, so it says death in the family.
They really kept track of things, didn't they?
Yeah, I think
it's amazing that there was any paperwork left that they could give you that.
Yeah.
You know, any records they could draw from.
Copy this and send it to me.
It's an interesting piece of paper, the way it's shaped.
There
it is with the logo on it.
Yeah. Apparently I wouldn't pick it up. They didn't mail it to me.
Apparently.
They had my name written on it.
So and, you were, what was I going to say?
Yeah, it was steady.
I've lost track of my thought here.
I can't remember ever getting laid off. We had one short, maybe a few days of work stoppage for strike. Most of the time, we settled all our contracts. And we don't have any time. At just one time, we had a short period of time. Just a matter of a few days, we went on strike.
I was just going to ask you about strikes. I think that's where my thought was going.
Because most of the time, there were always threats of strikes, you know, and the contracts come up due, and they'll extend the contract if we're going to. But they always settled. That one time we had a short period of time. I can only time I remember we were ever out on strike.
And the strike was for better wages or better?
I don't really remember the details. Usually
that's the bottom line.
It's wages or
benefits.
Benefits of some kind, but it was probably wages. I don't know what the dispute was at the time. But
what about the clubhouse? Did you? Can your family take part in activities at the clubhouse?
Yeah, I remember Christmas parties, going to Christmas parties, and it was quite popular. It was usually filled that place up, Christmas parties, and I remember meetings, and it was a great building. Of course, it had a great reputation for years. My mother telling about. They lived over here by Potter Park, and my grandfather worked for Rio.
Oh, you did?
They would walk to the clubhouse every Saturday to see free movies or music concerts. It was a community building that my mother talked about walking to every Saturday, walking to the club, Rio clubhouse to see movies and or see plays or music concerts or something. They participated quite a bit in it.
And it was all free for the employees.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
So you had other relatives that worked at Rio?
Yeah. I wish I knew more about when and what he did and what years he worked here. But I talked to my sisters and see what they got. They ended up with most of my mother's and dad's artifacts and.
Mm-hmm.
They may have a little better memory than I did. So what? When my he died when I was really young, because I had him,
very young,
and so I can't really remember him that well. They were immigrants from England. Like most of my aunts and uncles were. My mother was the first one to be born here, and there was I got seven or eight kids, and most of them were born in England. So they were immigrants, in the factory. I asked my mother what my dad, my grandfather died from. And she says, "Well, just hard work." But you know, factory work back then was hard work. You know,
there
was a lot of manual labor involved. And she said he just died from hard work. You know, and my father-in-law worked here. And we got some interesting history on him because we've got his huge certificate from. Graduating from Mansalona High School. And the dates on it was 1923 when he graduated in the spring. And we got some paperwork from apparently he came to Lansing and went into the Real Apprenticeship Program in the fall of 1923 and graduated in the apprenticeship program. We've got a photograph of him, the graduation photograph, and a lapel pin and a certificate where he graduated from Real Apprenticeship Program, Tool and Die, in 1925.
Tool and Die.
Yeah. And there was some...
So they had apprenticeship programs, ways of training people to come and work.
A lot of great apprenticeship programs at Rio and Oldsmobile. He eventually went to work for Oldsmobile and retired from Olds, but there's a time period in there that he must have worked for Rio for considerable, because I found some other documents where he's, the years he started with, that he'd worked in with the Oldsmobile for 30 years, but there was a time period in there from before he started working for Rio, that, or for Oldsmobile, that he must have worked for Rio for a period of time, but I don't have all that documentation to know exactly where he worked between the time he went, completed his apprenticeship and went to work with, but he was a, the job title of his was an upset die sinker. He worked in the die shops over on Saginaw Street, which is now the craft center. It was a little building.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what they call the craft center now. Or
that was that the real tool and die?
Was a foundry, actually. A foundry and tool, a lot of tool and die work there. That was the real foundry at the time.
It was.
So he did a lot of work in the foundry.
In the 20s, sometime in the 20s.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, any last thoughts? Anything that I haven't even thought about covering?
No.
Anything you'd like to share?
I can't think of anything.
Okay.
Anything else, but, yeah.
Oh, I know. When you retired, you probably were still too young to be retired. Did you go somewhere from there?
Jobs were really scarce, so I...
Were they?
So I worked a lot of part-time jobs just trying to make money. My wife went back to work. She's a registered nurse, and she went back to work to just, you know, put bread on the table, and it was tough times. She gave me all the jobs. It was available. Her was nights, and she worked nights and weekends, and we had three kids, you know, and... But I ended up, a friend of mine was working as a foreman on a construction job for Brown Brothers Construction in Lansing.
Brothers.
They owned a lot of diamond reel equipment, too.
They owned a lot of diamond reel...
Trucks, yeah.
Trucks. They,
yeah.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, and so they were, they had a drug project repairing bridges in the, down in the Jackson area on 27. And I worked two summers. In fact, I worked in the... in the repair shop, Brown Brothers repair shop, one winter and two summers I worked as a laborer.
You doing, were really overqualified, but
doing yeah. But it was tough work. You know, 40 years old out there running the jackhammer was tough work.
Oh
you
boy,
know, with labor it was tough work, but it paid well. It paid well, and we got a lot of overtime. They took good care of me. They worked, then I had an opportunity to, Charlie Green and was in the service department, and Tom Shumway was in the sales department. Both got a job for a company called Crane Carrier Company that built trucks in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Crane Carrier Company. And Tom
Shumway was a sales rep.
Shumway. Oh, okay.
He got a job right after Real closed.
Mm-hmm.
Got a job right away with Crane Carrier as a sales rep covering all the Midwest territory, and a short while later Charlie Green got a job in the service department. And Charlie Green, after a couple of years, it got a promotion, so he moved to Tulsa to work in the office as a manager in the service department. So he called me up and asked me if I be interested in the field service job, because I had been in the field service for a short period of time at Rio, and I said, yeah, I'd be interested. So I ended up going to Columbus, Ohio to interview for the job, because the manager of the service department was a graduate of Ohio State University, and he was going to the Oklahoma Ohio State football game. So I drove to Columbus, Ohio, and met him in a hotel in near the airport in Columbus, Ohio, and interviewed for the job, and he hired me, and I worked for him for 22 years as a field service rep. I traveled all over the United States and Canada for him.
That was good.
Yeah. A lot of traveling, but it's...
Think of all the people you've met and all the people you've worked with over the years.
I've met a lot of people.
Sounds like you've had two really good careers.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus father and husband. And that's a career, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a small company, and the benefits weren't all that great, so there was no benefits of retirement after I left there.
Oh,
But they had a 401k program, so I was able to invest some money in that so that I was...
That helps.
Able to survive my retirement, at least,
Good. So, did you have sons? Do you have sons?
Yeah, two sons and
did
a daughter.
Did they ever think of going into, say, Oldsmobile, or...?
My youngest son has worked for Oldsmobile for about 14 years.
Ah.
He works what's Fisher Body, which is the body plant now. He's had up and down, because there was layoffs, 10, 15 years ago, with a lot of layoffs, and he had a chance to go to Flint or work in another plant, but he stayed laid off, but he didn't take, they offered buyouts, he never accepted a buyout, but he ended up, after several years, calling him back. He was laid off several years. In fact, he was laid off longer than he worked, but they still called him back.
Wow.
And so he's had a steady job for probably 10 years. But he'll be laid off this changeover went before the new plant gets built and the shutdown of the Oldsmobile and the Pontiac too.
Yeah, well, we're really in the time of change, aren't we?
He'll be laid off for a while, but GM takes pretty good care of their employees with their union contract and stuff they got, so he'll be all right. My other son, he's got great mechanical ability. He worked at a company in Holland, Michigan now. They build automotive trim parts now. Part of Johnson Controls, but he worked there for 15 years. So they're losing a lot of jobs to Mexico too. But
very interesting talk, and you brought out some facts that I haven't had before. So hopefully anybody down through the years that's listening to these tapes to find out what was it really like at Rio. This will give them a bird's eye view.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.